welcome back to the Epic Universal Podcast. I'm entertainer writer Jim Hill, and I'm joined this evening by my co-host, Eric Hersey, and he and I are recording this week's episode on Thursday, March 14th. And apologies to our show's regular listeners. We are recording this week's show a little late, later than usual, but Eric, it's for a very good reason, right? That's because you and the rest of the Hersey clan were just down in Orlando for a week-long vacation, right?
Right. It was spring break here early in Wheeling, West Virginia for the kids. So we always take that opportunity to find ourselves taking the long drive down to Orlando. But this, Jim, was actually really a funny trip. This was the first trip that we actually joined and went into Disney. But I had kind of Universal on the back of my mind. The first trip since we've actually started recording, and I've taken this, you know, this leap into Universal fandom. So it was kind of interesting as I stood in lines and listened to the different individuals and those standing around me when they mentioned Universal. Like, my hair on my arms would stick up and my ears would perk out, and I'd be kind of listening and say, what's going on here? And I'd hear people talking about their splits day, that they're, hey, we're at Universal tomorrow. And then other people were like explaining, well, this ride is a lot like Hagrid's. It was like a enlightening experience.
Very cool. By the way, not to be a stickler, but the official full name of the thrill ride you just referenced is Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure. That attraction, which opened at Islands back in June of 2018, that can be found in Hogsmeade, the original Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which opened to the public 9 years before that, back in June of 2010. And by the way, folks, we've got some Wizarding World related news to share, which just broke earlier today. But we'll be getting to that in the second half of today's show. But first, the news. And as always, the news portion of today's show is brought to you by TouringPlans.com. Touring Plans help you save time and money at theme parks like Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. So please check them out at TouringPlans.com. Okay, Eric, let's talk about this trip. You know, what did you guys do while you were down in Orlando?
Well, the funny thing is, I think you were tipped off by Nancy that I posted a picture on Instagram, and I had a what I like to call the four horsemen pose, which is just four fingers up in front of the crosswords of the world and Hollywood Studios. So and you were like, hey, what's this all about? And the label was just four parks, one day. So I know this isn't a Disney theme park show, but stick with me here, Universal. Okay. This is a very valid question that will lead to something that I think all my Universal curious friends and I have, right? So, Jim, let me ask you this. Have you done the inevitable of four parks, one day at Walt Disney World?
I used to be able to do this. Now, mind you, in the past couple of years, what with, you know, COVID and, you know, the park reservation system, this was damn near impossible. But yeah, I've done it. I, you know, these days, you know, I can barely do the kingdom without taking a nap. So I talk about which day did you do this and where'd you start?
Oh, you know, it was kind of an odd start, and I've been wanting to do this for many trips, and we've done a lot. To me, I can get three parks in one day pretty easily, right? Because the transportation between, you can do a monorail from the Magic Kingdom to Epcot pretty easily, and then you can do the Skyliner from Epcot to Hollywood Studios. And we've done that on many occasions. But the Animal Kingdom is always the tough one. You have to figure out, to do a park hopping situation, you have to have some type of initiatives or some type of goal. Yes, you can scan in and get out in and out and just say you've done that. And that is an accomplishment in its own right nowadays when it comes to bag checks, the parking, yeah, all of this. Yeah. I mean, I think you can wrap up 3 or 4 miles before you even tap in sometimes from where you're walking. A lot of people, I think the diehards are all like, hey, you have to do an e-ticket attraction. But this kind of came on a whim where we're just so happened to already be at Epcot in the morning. And that's kind of where we started. But then we had a lunch at Sanaa, which is at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. And I knew we wanted to end our night at Hollywood Studios. And I'm thinking to myself, we're so close. to Animal Kingdom, and we drove. I'm like, I can get over there. We can get in. We can get an ice cream cone from Anandapur, and we can get the heck out. And we made it happen because my wife and her mom had a spa at the Grand Floridian Cafe, which is the cheat code to drive and park and get over to Magic Kingdom and bypass that lovely TTC. Oh, so
that's genius. That's, I mean, it's expensive genius, you know, it's going to the spa at the Grand Flow ain't cheap, but that's genius.
Only $400 parking, Jim. What?
Well, there we go. Boy.
No. So I don't ask questions. I have no idea how much the spa is. I know my limits, but needless to say, that's what happened. And we were able to make it happen. And I was very proud of my accomplishment. After 30 odd trips, we finally did the four parks in one day, which then leads me to this. And this is where it's really important. Super difficult to do kind of in Walt Disney World and have a good time. Let's be real. We don't want to just go down there and travel from park to park. But I guess I'm not as familiar with the layout of Universal's Florida. And my thought, what I always understood is the two parks are relatively close to each other. So park hopping between the two would probably be easy. But then again, you know, I haven't looked at a map and haven't really necessarily figured that out. But is that something that is fairly practical at Universal that people can jump back around almost as it's like Disneyland and California Adventure?
Well, I know. I'm so glad you said that. Because again, that's my concern. You know, if you think that it's sort of like, oh yeah, I step out, you know, out from under the train station and I walk 300 feet and I'm right into DCA. I'm there on Buena Vista Street. No, this is not that situation. And in fact, what's kind of interesting is that the original Universal Studios Park, it opened in June of 1990s. Now, IOA didn't open till like almost 9 years later, May of 99. And what you had to do is get, but the thing is, they're not facing each other directly. These parks are basically built side by side. And what you had to do to get from, say, the original park, Universal Studios Florida, over to IOA, is you know, on either side of the waterway there, you had to walk through a chunk of City Walk. And now from a bookkeeping point of view, brilliant idea. You know, it means that people are walking by stores and doing impulse buying, or if they're hungry and they've left the park, they're walking by Hard Rock or the Sweets Emporium or that sort of thing. So smart idea if you're trying to get people to spend money as they're going between parks. On the other hand, it's tough on people who are already tired, you know, from walking around the parks for the day. And now, mind you, this changed in July of 2014. That's when the Hogwarts Express opened up, which connected both parks from Hogsmeade over to Diagon Alley. And again, I'm so looking forward to you getting the family down there, because, you know, what's interesting about the Hogwarts Express is there are two different ride experiences. That if you're going, for example, from Diagon Alley to Hogsmeade, you get to see Malfoy Manor. And if you're going from Hogsmeade over to Diagon Alley, you actually get Hagrid, who basically says goodbye to you on the rail platform there. And you even get to see, you know, Ron's brothers, the Weasley twins, riding on brooms and shooting off fireworks. I mean, it's a great thing.
Well, let me ask you this, because that's what I always heard. That's like an attraction, right?
This is a thing that you...
Yeah. But is it a paid attraction? Do you have to pay to do that? Because I always understood that there is some type of – you can get there and it's like a nah. Like you don't have the right ticket.
Am I right? There we go. All right. That is the caveat. You do – in order to take advantage of the Hogwarts Express, you have to have a two-park pass. And more to the point, you have to present it to a Universal team member, either in King's Cross Station over in Diagon Alley or outside of Diagon Alley, and Hogsmeade there at the train station there. And again, if you don't have the right media, they will apologize and point you to a ticket booth where you can upgrade your pass. But so, yeah, you need that ticket. Also, The other teeny tiny flaw with this is that both of these points where you gain access to the Hogmoid Beads Express, very deep in the park. They're way back there, both in Islands and the original studio. So it's a hike to take advantage of this. And more to the point, it's also a hike, no matter where you are in the park, from the two Harry Potter things out to the original entrance. But still worth it. Still, still very enjoyable. And speaking of which, you were just talking about taking advantage of Disney's own transportation system. I just want to share an interesting tidbit here. The bus system that services Universal's Endless Summer Resort, Surfside opened back in June of 2019, Dockside opened in December 2020. That bus system, Eric, actually manages to get folks from International Drive to the park's entrance faster than the bus that takes guests who are staying at the Universal Cabana Bay Hotel over to the entry point central transportation hub. So, which really bodes well for Epic Universe and the two hotels there, how people get from, say, the main campus over to the satellite. And by the way, that brings me to a quick question here. And I'd love if we've got some Universal team members out there who can clarify this. That's how I've heard they were supposed to be referring to the overall Universal Resort now, that there is the main campus, where you've got Islands and the studios and, the five hotels. And then there's the satellite facility. And that's where Epic Universe and the Helios and the other two, the Moderate Hotel, are located. So is that the right terminology? And can somebody let us know? Because that would be great.
Yeah, that's been my main thought. Now, granted, I have to look at an overhead map, and maybe we'll talk to Bio Reconstruct and see if he can get a wide enough shot.
There we go.
But I'm just my thought is, all right, where is this Epic compared to the others, and how easy access? Because I know that typically when I'm on a Disney property, if you're staying at one of the monorail resorts, your home park is going to be Magic Kingdom. Or possibly Epcot. But if you're at Boardwalk, boy, we're walking to Epcot every single day. And so my thought is, if you're staying at Epic Universal aspect, like if you're one of those parks, that's where you're going to hub. And boy, you don't necessarily want to take a 20-30 minute drive every single day to these others. So it's just interesting to see. But if the transportation system is worked out and they can get you there, it sounds to me right now, you can get from Endless Summer to the parks quicker than if you're at Cabana. That's good news. That's highly good news. So certainly interested to see how that works.
Same thing here. And speaking of news, we are now at my favorite segment of the show, News or Not. So, all right, Eric, what headlines have you gathered this week?
All right. Well, I don't have a ton today because we have a very jam-packed show with all types of goodies. But for the most part, the first thing that I love every year, there's multiple reasons I love it. And it may not be my son's actual birthday, but Mario Day, which if you're not familiar with what Mario Day, take the abbreviation of March, M-A-R, and you take the number 10, you put it together, and there you have Mario. So Jim, were you familiar with Mario Day up until a couple years ago?
I was not, but again, we've talked about my lack of hand-eye coordination, which translates into zero skills when it comes to video games. But I'm getting better. You got to pay attention to Super Nintendo and that sort of thing, because things are coming over the horizon. So.
Right. And Mario Day is kind of the kickoff of the fake March holidays. Like today we have Pi Day. So then we have the Ides of March. We're just moving right forward. But so what I found was that on Tech Radar and several other outlets announced that everything announced for Mario, for the whole year was announced on Mario Day. So my question was, does Universal do anything special on Mario Day? It seems like it would be a prime day, but
not yet. No, I caveat, I will have to reach out to the folks at Universal Studios Hollywood, because obviously they're the ones with the Super Nintendo World. We're still a year in change out from Orlando getting a Super Nintendo World. Now, it is worth noting that, you know, Universal and Nintendo did reveal, you know, on March 10th that we're going to get another animated feature from Illuminations that is set in the world of Mario. Now, they you know, what's interesting is they were kind of insistent that this will not necessarily be a sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie, which came out in April of last year. But yeah, that so yeah, I, you know, I this is sort of news, you know, that they
could, Jim, I think you're being kind. I don't even know. I think it's just Mario Day. Now, I'll tell you what I think might be news. I don't think anything that they announced in terms of what's coming out for Nintendo really affects us as theme park fans. Maybe gaming fans. There might be some stuff out there. But I will tell you that they also announced, I don't know if it was the same day or later, that their AMC, certain AMC theaters are actually going to bring back the Mario Brothers movie just on June 28th. So if you didn't see it last year in the theaters, you have that single day, you can go see it in the theaters. And I don't know if that will do anything or not, but I saw that as released.
That's interesting. Okay.
That's just like one day, go see the movie again.
So there we go.
Big
there
smash. We go. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, the next story that I found, it's actually Universal Orlando Resort no longer offers this free service, which is a lovely clickbait article just to find out what that service is. So to further up, this is actually talking about the complimentary package pickup. So you might know more about this in general, but it sounds to me like you could buy anything in Universal, I guess, the studio store, and you didn't have to carry it around with you. They would actually let you pick that up. But now that is no longer offered for regular guests, only for the hotel guests. So is that what you're seeing, Jim? Is that a big deal? How many people utilize that? Should we be concerned that they're losing this free service, or is it just something to get a click so that way we can get paid for some ads?
Face it, you know, what's been interesting out in the real world. I mean, for example, we've seen Amazon sort of creep in the notion of free delivery, you know, your threshold for what you have to spend to get free delivery crept up. I mean, this seems to be the drumbeat in 2024. It's like, oh, the price of that went up. But at the same time, what's interesting is a Universal can point to the fact, well, you know, if you're staying at one of our hotels, you still get this. You know, trying to steer you in the direction of staying on property there. So, I would say this is news. But again, in the bigger framework of 2024, it's like, oh, yeah, oh, great. The price of something went up or they took it away from us. What a surprise. So,
right. No. Right, yeah. Right. Well, people will either be carrying around larger packages in the parks,
there we go.
Won't be buying anything at all, I guess. So
okay. Well, again, you know, you can get those cinder blocks at home, folks. You know, they only that's buy right. The light things. You know, so
right. Okay. Right. All right. Our next story, Jim, and I know you're familiar with this. I think you talked about it with Drew. Even Kung Fu Panda 4. It opened up, and it's carrying a franchise to a $2 billion worldwide box office. So for me, I'm not so much wondering, I don't pay too much attention to box office numbers and how much movies make and so forth. So I'm like, it's 2 billion sounds good. Billion with a B. So what's your take on this, Jim? And kind of what's your overall take on the Kung Fu Panda 4? What's the word out there?
Well, what's kind of interesting, again, Drew and I talked about this on this week's Fine Tuning. Went into this weekend. It had been 8 years since Kung Fu Panda 3 had come out. So there were kind of concerns about how's this going to do. And the initial projections said, you know, 50 million for North America, and actually overperformed. It did 58. And again, what's kind of interesting about this is good news for the folks at Universal, especially the folks at Universal Creative, because they've just bet big on Poe and his pals. In fact, I did you see when you were away the detailed announcement of DreamWorks Land for Universal Studios Florida?
I did. I said, we're going to talk about that. And I was excited to see the renderings. And then on our way home, because I'm a Patreon subscriber, I got the early edition of the Disney Dish and I got some good insight from you and Len. And I said, this is great. Now I have somebody that actually knows a little bit more, but we can expand on that, right?
Yes. Len and I spoke in depth about this, but let's just walk through it quick. So again, we were just talking about Kung Fu Panda. So this area of DreamWorks Land has Po's Kung Fu training camp. And what's kind of interesting about this is that, again, there are kid-friendly activities like you can help the pandas wash and dry laundry using water cannons. And there's also baby pandas and oversized noodle bowls and Mr. Pink's noodle shop. But the thing I thought was interesting about this was the Po Live, which is basically sounds like Universal's take on Turtle Talk Live.
Right. That's, you know, I mean, a digital meet and greet. That has to be what it is, which is,
yep,
which is quite fantastic. And I think I would do that as an adult. I think I'd be all right with that.
Okay. Well, now speaking of meet and greets, instead of digital, if we head over to Shrek's, the Shrek side of DreamWorks Land, we have Shrek's Swamp Meet, where you can get the chance to meet with Shrek, Princess Fiona, and Donkey right there with Shrek's cottage. And then just across the way from that, we have Shrek's Swamp for Little Ogres. And again, this is another play area with slides and water play. And I'm a little concerned about this, a retirement home for cats. It's just sort of like that. And again, this is an interactive screen thing. Just so long as they don't ask me to clean the box, I'll be happy. We also have King Harold Swamp Symphony, which, by the way, thanks to our friend BioReconstruct, who did a flyover of the still under construction DreamWorks Land. We now know this is, you know, it's basically a bunch of frogs, you know, on stone walls with lily pads directly in front of them. And the notion is if you want these frogs to sing, you jump from lily pad to lily pad. And that's what makes their mouths open and they do. So it's one of these trying to encourage cooperation among young people thing. And then, of course, because it's a theme park, there's a snack booth, the Swamp Snacks. By the way, the featured item here is going to be the Shrexel, which is a Shrek-shaped pretzel.
And this next one's beautiful. This next is my favorite. Far, far, oh, awful is great naming. The puns, that's like, that should go back to California Adventure 1.0. Well, that's how good that pun is.
And that's, you know, speaking of which, they had what? The yogurt place there. And here we have frozen ogre as opposed to frozen yogurt. So
there we go.
Anyway, all right, we pivot over to the trolls area. And we, of course, have the Troller Coaster, which is a sort of a retheming of the Woody Woodpecker Nuthouse coaster. And then, you know, we have, you know, things like Poppy's Playground, which again, you know, this is 20-foot tall mushroom shaded place where little kids can play, and sort of a companion to Swamp Snacks. We have Troll Treats, where we can get pink lemonade flavored Poppylicious pink beverages. And it's like, wow, that does, as a diabetic, that sounds a little concerning. And then we have, what a surprise, you know, we have a retail area, the High Five Hideaway. So, I know we walked through that fairly quickly, Eric, but I wanted to ask, given again, you've got, Miles is 9, is that correct? Or
he just turned 7.
7, my mistake. All right, I turned the 6 upside down. All right, so he just turned 7, and again, you have your two older children. So you and your lovely wife have spent a lot of time in kiddie lands, you know, being surrounded by IP like this. And of the stuff we just walked through, what appeals to you? What do you think is going to, you know, connect with the Miles of the world?
So I think truthfully, I even the wife was really excited about trolls. Like that legitimately, when she heard the news of the trolls, she's like, all right, sign me up. And I think Trolls has a really good, their last film was great. It had plenty of music, always does, is very colorful, and I think relates well. I fear, you know, Kung Fu Panda obviously wasn't out for 8 years, so my kid didn't even know it until now. So we'll see if he jumps on and that becomes a favorite. Shrek, honestly, Shrek seems like it's been around for a long time, but I remember Shrek coming out when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And it was very witty and fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if Shrek will still have the same promotional value to, you know, the children as though. But I will tell you, there's a, as a parent, there seems to be a lot of water here. And that scares me because I when it comes to these parks, if there's a water feature, I'm like covering my kid's head. I do not want to have to deal with wet socks, wet shoes, and deal with the kids complaining the rest of the trip. So
I get that. But that's, you got to understand, it's Orlando. You know, I mean, right. Again, you were just there in March, and there are days where it's like, I am walking on the sun. So, a water feature. Yes, I will go and I will play with that.
Yeah.
But speaking of water, which makes you think of Universal Studios Lagoon. Did you see, and I want to say it was Alicia Stella, who scored these videos, which, by the way, I think were captured by cameras that people had in it, weather cameras that they had in their apartments across the way from Universal Studios Florida. But did you see that there was a drone test for the new nighttime show?
At Universal, there's a drone test. I know there was some drone testing at Disney Springs at some point.
Well, no, we are actually, that's where it's fascinating. Again, once again, Disney and Universal competing. They had, and this looked like a significant fleet of drones out over the lagoon in Universal Studios. And, you know, they, mind you, they were just sort of doing the standard test to see, you know, they form cubes, they, you know, that sort of thing, just to see, all right, would this work in this space? And how many drones can we do safely and yada, yada, yada. But yeah, the fact that they're testing in late February, early March.
Jim, I think this isn't so much a war between, or a race, I should say, between Disney and Universal, but more so the lawyers of Disney and Universal to see who has the better legal team here, because I think that will determine who gets the drone show first. So,
okay. Well, you know, you want a souvenir hard hat, don't you? You know, just something to take home with you from your trip to Orlando. Okay.
Gladly.
Okay, now, again, just to circle back to the topic we were just talking about, DreamWorks Animation. Universal, remember, that was a standalone company that Universal acquired in April of 2016 for $3.8 billion. And again, billion with a B. Now, on the other hand, so, you know, relatively new part of the company. On the other hand, Universal Studios Hollywood, the backstage tour thing, Eric, that started in July of 1964, which means that will be celebrating its 60th anniversary this summer. And what they've done, which I think is a kind of a lovely idea to sort of for the 60th anniversary, is they brought back the original look of what back in 64 was called the Glamour Tram. Now, again, as a lover of Disney and its parks, what you'll appreciate is that the Glamour Tram was actually designed by Harper Goff, who was one of the original Imagineers. I mean, he did a lot of the heavy lifting on the Jungle Cruise. And it's also worth noting that, you know, if you're a fan of Disney's 20K film, he's the guy who designed the Nautilus. So,
And he also, and he's a Willy Wonka guy, right?
He's the guy who designed the Wonkatania, which I want to ride on some point in my life. Anyway, over 2 million people have ridden the Universal Backstage Tram Tour since it started in 64. And now what's kind of interesting is that one of the favorite component parts of this thing, Earthquake, the big one, that closed last summer for retooling and is supposed to reopen this spring. So it's going to be interesting to see what a next generation Earthquake looks like at Universal Studios Hollywood. Although, of course, again, there were people who would argue if we're talking about Universal, the big one really is Harry Potter. And we're going to talk at length about some really exciting news coming out of the Wizarding World just today. But first, this. And we're back. Eric, before we get to the feature, and again, I know you're just back from Orlando. So, you know, you're a guy who understands how expensive it can be to visit this part of the world. But did you see this ticket, offer info that just broke over the last day or so?
You shared some information with me, I think, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I even have the ticket price right. What was the ticket price that you were saying?
Well, no, where this starts is that Disney announced that they have the 4-day Discovery ticket. Mind you, this is just for Florida residents, but it's for $63 a day plus tax. $250 a person. But it allows you to gain access to the Disney parks from April 2nd through September 28th of this year. Mind you, park reservations are necessary, but again, this is a Florida residence. And, you know, and what's especially interesting about that is, as Mr. Chesta pointed out earlier today, that April 2nd, September 28th date, this is when supposedly Tiana's Bayou Adventure will be opening, the Florida version. Well, Universal, this offer came out the door, and Universal said, okay, you want to play that game. They released their own ticket offer. So it's 4 days, $74 a day plus tax. So it's a two-park play 4 days promo. But here's the thing. This ticket is not supposedly limited to Florida residents. This is so yes, it's $11 more than Disney's $63 a day, but it's regular folks.
49 other states, Jim.
Yeah.
or for that matter, everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Now, but this is kind of an interesting 1-2 punch because we had this news break just as Universal was putting out a press release. Well, do you want to share the news about what is coming to both Universal Orlando and Universal Studios Hollywood?
Oh, absolutely. But I have lots of questions, Jim. Okay. So be prepared.
Okay. Will do.
And everyone else tolerate if you know the answers or just scream along. That's what we do in podcasts. We hear you. But no, it looks like Universal Orlando Resort and Universal Studios Hollywood celebrate Butterbeer season in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And this features a limited time treats from March 15th through April 30th. So that's tomorrow.
There we go. So surprise. So
right. Mm-hmm. So they gave us a lot of notice, but for the most part, I'm very excited to hear. So it's not just butterbeer. It looks like they're also going to do some ice cream counter service, serving 10 flavors of soft serve ice cream, including butterbeer. So that is pretty darn exciting. And I guess that's opening on March 29th in Honeydukes. So, Jim, I have questions, but you go ahead. Butterbeer in general, I've heard amazing things, literally amazing things for years, that it is a must have, a must do, must delight. But obviously these lips have never tasted it. And I had to Google today to see what does butterbeer taste like. So Universal Curious friends out here, I'm going to read this to you. Essentially, it's a butterscotch cream soda with a float or something like toasted marshmallow, like cream. So does that sound right, Jim?
It does. It does. You know, but the interesting thing is, now remember, our first Harry Potter book comes out in June of 1997, and butterbeer is mentioned in that book, which is why when our first Harry Potter movie, which of course is based on the first book, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, if you're in the UK, or Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, if you're here in the States, that's December 2001. And what was kind of interesting is that nobody knew what butterbeer tasted like. So you'd go to like these events at Barnes and Noble when, you know, when Goblet of Fire or that sort of thing would drop. And, you know, one of the things was somebody would have whipped up a batch of butterbeer. And it was typically something that was kind of butterscotchy and cream soda-y and put you into a diabetic coma in about 3 minutes. But here's the thing, you know, that people were doing this on their own because they loved the books and they loved the world. And it's like, and, you know, here's, you know, Harry and Hermione and Ron, they're drinking their butterbeer, you know, and so it's like, I want to have that experience too. We jump ahead now to May of 2007. Universal acquires the theme park rights to Harry Potter. And I want to stress here, after Disney dropped the ball. Disney had, I want to say it was a letter of intent with J.K. Rowling. They were actually supposed to, you know, in effect, Eric, you'll love this. This was what was originally envisioned before New Fantasyland at the Magic Kingdom. There was going to be a Harry Potter mini land added to the Magic Kingdom. And I want to say there was a Defense of the Dark Arts ride that was sort of, you know, a wand-based version of Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin. And then there was going to be a Care of Magical Creatures petting zoo. But the big thing was going to be that there was going to be a tiny little quick service where you could go, you know, that was sort of not three broomsticks, maybe one broomstick. But you could get butter beer there. But again, Disney, you know, dropped the ball and Universal got it. And Universal knew from day one that butterbeer was going to be a big deal. So they wanted to do it right. So there is executive chef Stephen Jason, a wonderful guy, worked for Universal for over two decades at this point. And he just took this project and ran with it. In fact, I've been lucky enough to interview Stephen Jason a number of times now. And one time, for example, he, you know, showed me his library of Harry Potter books. And what was fascinating is he showed them to me and they had all of these different colored post-its sticking out of them. And I was asking, well, what is that? And he's like, that's every time in any one of the books somebody mentions food or drink.
Oh boy.
You know, so it's like, I mean, he was mining these things. And so,
right.
And so that was the thing. He did, I want to do butterbeer right. So he and the chefs at Universal came up with a couple of different versions. And, but again, that they were determined they had to do this right. And so they made, you know, plans to fly over to Scotland and meet with J.K. Rowling herself and have her decide, you know, the woman who wrote the Harry Potter books, which was, you know, what butterbeer actually tastes like. Now, mind you, this is post 9/11 and they're carrying all of these ingredients. Kind of interesting to get through the TSA, or according to Steve. But fine, you know, they get over to, you know, to Scotland and they get a prep kitchen and they carry the beverages out to Ms. Rowling. And again, and Steve still talks proudly about, you know, she takes a sip of one particular thing. That's it, chef, you've done it. This is butterbeer. And so, but here's the thing. All right. Now, the Wizarding World, the first one, Hogsmeade, opens in June of 2010. And in that recreation of the Harry Potter, there were three places you could get butterbeer. You could get it inside of the Three Broomsticks restaurant. You could go into the Hogshead Tavern, or there was this amazing beer cart, you know, a giant red beer barrel that was on a cart in the middle of the land. And Eric, from day one, all right, there were people lined up, you know, I mean, hours long line to get butterbeer. You know, they had to have this. They had to have it. It was, and in fact, one of my favorite stories in relation to butterbeer is 5 months after The first Wizarding World of Harry Potter opens. Comcast decides that it wants to buy NBC Universal. So one of the, you know what happens during an acquisition. You open your books. Right. You know, people, you know, have to review the finances before they can make an informed decision. And so, you know, the folks at Comcast get the books, and they particularly get the books for Isla's Adventure, the new Harry Potter land, and they look at it and it's like, are you kidding me? You know, that's, well, first of all, it's like they have the real number, you know, for what it costs to change the previous land that was in Islands, a lost continent, into the Wizarding World. And that was $170 million. But here's the thing. They're looking at, you know, what the merch sales, the food sales, the beverage sales are. And, you know, the guys at Comcast, are you kidding me? You made back the full $170 million in 5 months off of the sale of Butterbeer? And it's like, yes, we did. And so, so again, you know, but what's interesting is that during this window of time, the mystique of Butterbeer, by the way, there were two ways you could have it. You could have it cold or you could have it frozen. And in fact, one of the other things that really drove up sales is you could get it in a plastic cup or you could get it in a souvenir mug that had the three broomsticks on it. And of course, all the Harry Potter fans of the world wanted the three broomstick mug. So, but the thing is, people would get their cup of Butterbeer, which, by the way, you know, they would complete the service by the little foam at the top was added at the very end, you know, but people would try to run it out of the park so they could take it back to their kitchens and figure out, well, what is it that makes this butter beer so great? But the thing is, the chemical composition of the ingredients and that sort of thing, it's Florida. Again, you're on the sun, you know, it just, by the time you got to your car, it's mush. Again, Comcast looks at the books and says, you guys can build Wizarding Worlds wherever you want. You know, we're great with that idea. So April of 2013, we learned that the Wizarding World is coming to Universal Studios Hollywood. And of course, how do you celebrate an announcement like that? You drink a glass of Butterbeer. So here's the Los Angeles press corps is thrilled, you know, that everybody turns out for this press announcement because, hey, we can get that Butterbeer thing that everybody's talking about.
Right.
But again, because it's a state secret, I mean, they bring all the ingredients, they fly them out to Hollywood, they prepare it just for this press announcement, and as soon as it's over, and I got a press friend who was there, it's like, it broke my heart. I watched them pour everything that was left down the drain, because it's like, nope, this ain't leaving the building. Disney can't find it. Now we jump ahead to July of 2014, which is when the Wizarding World Diagon Alley opens. And by the way, when I was working with HuffPo during this period, about 3 or 4 months before the land opened up, I Universal was great. They flew me down. I got a tour of the still under construction land, and they took me for lunch inside of the Leaky Cauldron. And again, beautifully amazing detailed space that, you know, reminiscent of the films and the books. And what's funny is that if you walk into the kitchen, you go, you know, inside of two steps, you go from the 16th century to the 25th century. I mean, it's like NASA in there. But anyway, we finish our lovely meal where they give me a sampling of everything that's going to be served at the Leaky Cauldron. And then they walk me up to Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor, where I am among the very first people to get to try the newest version of Butterbeer, which is Butterbeer ice cream. And, you know, I take a bite and Steve Jason is sort of hanging on my elbow. What do I think? And I said, it's like, oh my God, it's like you guys invented a new flavor of crack. And Steve cackles and then turns to the PR guy. Can we use that? I don't think we can use that, but I really like that. I'm going to tell people that. That fall, November 2014, we get another variation of Butterbeer, Eric. We get hot Butterbeer, which you know, my friend Seth Kabersky, who does the touring plans guide for Universal, we really need to bring on the show. I think Seth was the one who said, you know, well, this is, you know, it's sort of a warm glass of diabetes, but it's wonderful, you know?
Right.
And then, in February of 2016, we get another variation of Butterbeer. We get Butterbeer Fudge, which is sold at Honey Dukes. And, but again, remember, this is Disney. You know, the Disney lost, the opportunity to have Harry Potter in its theme parks. And so around the same time, Disney announced that they're going to be building Star Wars Land in Florida and in California. And Eric, the stories about the time and the money that was spent on blue milk, because Disney was determined that – you know, they were going to have their own butterbeer, and it was going to be blue or green milk. And I have to ask, we were just talking about Miles. Has Miles had blue or green milk?
Jim, I will tell you this. Mm-hmm. He and I both enjoy variations of the blue milk at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. We literally get it every time. And I don't know if it's the novelty. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Or what have you, but okay. We are one of the few out there that actually probably
I was
say,
about
hey.
To say, yeah, and just forgive me for asking, do you get the daddy's variation of the blue milk, the nice little shot in it, or?
Well, what happens is, you know, as a parent, I have to decide how much I'm willing to spend on all these blue milks and if we're going to share. So we typically get a blue and a green. Okay. We take our picture in Galaxy's Edge, and then my two kids, well, three kids decide to steal them, and I get a drink of each. But no daddy's drink, which had me wondering, just as a sidebar here, Butterbeer is not actually alcoholic, right?
No, not at all. In fact, we're going to get to an interesting question at the end of the segment, but you've thrown an interesting question out there. But yeah, Disney wanted blue milk and green milk to be their Butterbeer, but meanwhile, here's Universal continuing to charge ahead. June of 2017, that's when Butterbeer-flavored potted cream ends up being available for purchase at the Leaky Cauldron. And then in May of 2021, by the way, hot Butterbeer was only served seasonally. In fact, it was, you know, a big treat, so to speak, you know, during the special holiday celebrations, you know, the theming they do down there. But yeah, starting in May of 2021, hot Butterbeer became available year round. But here's the kicker, Eric, that we, of course, are a year out from the opening of Epic Universe, and that's going to have its own Wizarding World with its Ministry of Magic attraction. And I've heard from folks at Universal about that there will be yet another variation of Butterbeer debuting with this theme park. And I honestly, I was going to put the question out there to the effect of, well, what's left to do? And I think you actually just hit upon it. Oh, my God. You know, what if it's time now for a Butterbeer for adults, something with a little bit of an alcoholic kick? Would they do that, do you think?
I'm at Epcot in the evening. There is lots of money to be made by alcoholic beverages.
So, Jim,
what you're telling me is that you can build a Harry Potter land with 5 months of sales with Butterbeer. So Epic Universe will be paid off within 5 months with alcoholic Butterbeer.
Wow.
And that's how we get more theme parks in Orlando.
Wow.
No, I think, I'm super, super excited. I think that is one of the things that I'm like, this is an absolute must. If the line is 3 hours long, I will wait and get myself a butter because I've only heard great things. And you're right. I remember when the blue milk was coming out and that was the big comparison. They're going to make this because they're going to make buku bucks off it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's just not enough Hershey's in the world to make blue milk a thing. I mean, as much as we love that to be, but there is one other thing that we've tried, and it's a really footnote.
Okay.
LeFou's Brew at Gaston's is not, and they all, people were trying to tell me, well, that's what they ended up doing, you know, when they lost it, not even close. Jim, have you had a LeFou's Brew?
I have, and it's kind of an apple, frozen apple cidery thing with a, and again, it also has a kind of a foam head to it that they add after the fact. I mean, in fact, what's interesting, we were just talking about the souvenir mug that they serve the butter beer in. And that was the thing of LeFou's Brew, you know, the
notion. I have it.
Yeah. Well, of course, same thing here. I have the mug, but it was a one and done. It's like,
that's okay. How we think.
Yeah.
It maybe would be better if our friend Josh Gad would sign it. And then it's a true LeFou's Brew. But until then, let's stick with butter beer. And I'm super excited that will be one of the first things I do. And we'll get butterbeer for all flavors, and especially that ice cream. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. But again, to sort of circle back to what we were talking about just a little bit ago, we now know a bit more about DreamWorks Land, and we now know that there's a drone show coming. Can we talk you into June-ish?
Jim, that $74 per day for people in West Virginia, I hear, is one of those things. It's still one of those, like, all right, this is all sounding better and better and better. And I'm getting close to the edge, and it makes a lot of sense. So there are still so many more questions, Jim, and I need
those
answers.
Totally. And by the way, again, we just want to say Eric and I have so enjoyed the feedback we've gotten so far on the podcast. It seems like you folks are really enjoying our blathering here, and you're coming at us with great suggestions. In fact, it was very interesting to have, you know, when we put it out there, should we start at Hollywood? Should we do the Florida? And you folks all have opinions about this, and dang, we will share those on an upcoming episode. Till that episode airs, Eric, where can folks find you online?
I think the easiest right now is just Eric Hersey on Instagram or Twitter X, both very easy to find, and you'll be able to see me post random pictures and or general comments. Mm-hmm. What about you, Jim?
Well, let's see. You can find me on Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Speaking of Jim Hill Media, we do have a podcast network, and just want to remind you, we've got some other shows we'd love you to check out. We of course have The Mothership, Disney Dish, which I do with Len Testa. We have Fine Tuning, which I do with Drew Taylor, who, by the way, has his own wonderful podcast that he does with Charles Hood, the Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. Brian Gunn and I should be getting a new Looking at Lucasfilm out the door in the next week or so. And your lovely Brian and I, we do the Disney merch show. I want that too. And I guess we'll be recording a new episode of that this weekend, where Lauren will be sharing news of everything she saw on this trip down to Florida. What else? Oh, geez. The thing we do at Patreon, Disney Unpacked, the whole suite of shows we do there with veteran Imagineer Jim Shule. We're just now completing this month's shows, which are about Rock and Roller Coaster, an attraction Jim helped get up out of the ground. And next month, in fact, Eric, you're cutting and pasting, hacking away at this thing right now. Our show about Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger Spin, and all of the various versions of that ride you can find places around the planet.
Right, Jim. And to be honest, I made sure this week I was a galactic hero just so I could get that shot in that video that we can share. So I got the 999. I knew the three spots to hit, and I have that. So I got my sticker And listen, earlier in the week, my son got the sticker and they swore him in. They did an oath. Oh. And that's, I have questions for Jim Shule. Oh. Is that supposed to happen each time? Because I have not been ever sworn in by cast members. So mark it on your Q&A already.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so, you know, but I guess it says a lot about me that I'm not after the Galactic Hero sticker. You know, I was that guy. You know, just sort of, there we go.
So. Right. Yes. Yes. Right. No, but I'm excited about the episodes coming up and the Buzz Lightyear is going to be great. The Rock and Roller Coaster has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And I even had a sneak peek of what you guys just did for Picture This. And that's going to blow people's minds when that comes out.
I'm hoping. Stay tuned
to the Patreon feed. And if you haven't subscribed, what are you doing? Subscribe. But guys, I think that ends it here. That does another wonderful episode. Thanks for hanging with us. Jim, thanks for the amazing stories and really the origin and history of Butterbeer. Who knew what we were getting today? But, you know, I wish I had a clasp right now and we could cheers on our way out.
Well, you know, that sometime this summer we'll do that. So
we're going to make that happen.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, on behalf of Jim Hill, I'm Eric Hersey. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.